Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we'll be meeting a preeminent classical guitarist who's played the great concert halls of the world with great orchestras. So what is Sharon Isbin doing playing with Katy Perry and Sting? Find out a little bit later. But first, we go behind the headlines with St. Louis Public Radio reporters Joe Manis, who covers politics, and State House reporter Marshall Griffin will be joined in a moment or two by Jason Rosenbaum of our St. Louis Public Radio news staff. I'll start with you, Joe. Thanks for being with us. Thanks all for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Particularly interested in your story this week about Missouri and Illinois suddenly becoming relevant again in the whole presidential primary thing.
I know. It's like what they say. Who would have thunk it? Yeah. I mean, just even a month ago, some people were saying, I wasn't sure, but some people were saying we were going to be pointless. But it turns out, I mean, while Super Tuesday, you did see some solid victories by Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, they're not near enough. What will or will won't happen by March 15th was going to make either of them in a formidable position.
That's primary day, by the way.
Correct. Or it's going to give Rubio and Cruz a possible chance. I think less so about Sanders, but there's always a possibility. Depends kind of what goes on with the news. But the bottom line is that Missouri, which has 84 Democratic delegates and 52 Republican delegates, all of a sudden that will matter. It's part of that math. Now, Illinois has the primary in the same day. They probably won't see as much Republican activity, but they may see some between Sanders and Hillary, which is why Sanders was at SIUE this morning. It was a way for him to reach both states. This morning, I was lucky enough, the Rubio people called me and gave us first crack at the fact that Kit Bond, who had been with Jeb Bush, is now with Rubio. And the House Speaker, Todd Richardson, and the Senate leader, Ron Richard, is already with Rubio. Right. So Rubio is hoping that these big-name endorsements will maybe actually get him some rank-and-file support. The internal polls that I've been seeing aren't looking that great for him. Yeah. I mean, it looks like Trump is ahead from what I've been seeing in Missouri. It doesn't mean that's true, even though none of the big shots are with him. It's just like what's happening in other states. Cruz has some solid people, operatives, and especially Jeff Rowe, who is his campaign manager, who's from Kansas City, who know the state. So there's going to be a lot of maneuvering on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, all the big shots are with Clinton. But it's unclear if she's going to be here again. She was here in December. If she comes to Missouri, frankly, she'd probably make more sense for her to go to Kansas City. So it's going to be very interesting the next couple of weeks. We're probably going to see some ads, if not the people. And so it's going to be kind of fun.
Well, the television stations will love that because they make a lot of money during political campaigns. You mentioned Sanders, and Jason Rosenbaum has been covering him over at SIU Edwardsville this morning. And Jason joins us by phone. He's still on campus, as I understand it. Jason, give us the quick headline and overview of the Sanders appearance.
If I had to pick a headline, it would be Bernie Sanders wows mostly young people crowd at SIU.
In other words, the same headline that you'd get every place he goes.
Yes, because one of the big reoccurring themes throughout the Bernie Sanders campaign is that he's really caught on with a lot of young people across the country. Obviously, I'm on a college campus right now, and I think that was purposeful so they could get as many youthful supporters in as possible. And it was a pretty large crowd. The capacity, I think, of this basketball stadium was around 4,500 or 4,700 people. It was basically filled. I'm terrible at crowd estimates, but there was a large, raucous, supportive crowd here for the Vermont senator. And he went through many of his similar themes that he's been talking about for months, tuition-free college, overhauling the campaign contribution system, overhauling criminal justice laws. And he also critiqued Secretary Clinton on her vote for the Iraq War, her favoritism of some trade deals. But I just got to say, the critiquing was very mild compared to what we saw last night with the Republicans. So it definitely put some things in perspective.
This may be an unfair question to ask of you, having spent a relatively small amount of time over there. But, you know, a lot of people aren't giving him much of a chance to win the nomination. And the big question will be, will the young vote that is so supportive of him, will those people be voting in November if he's not there? Any sense of that possible to discern today?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, his speech was by and large kind of a recitation of what he believes, and it was not really much of a rock'em sock'em criticism of Clinton, although there were points in time when he did criticize Clinton on some issues. I would just have to imagine that many of the people who are going to be voting for Sanders in these primaries across the country, I think they would have a really hard time voting for any of the available Republican candidates that are left. I guess it's hypothetically possible that especially some of the younger voters may not vote at all if he's not there, but I just can't imagine that if Clinton is the nominee, she's not going to be able to recoup a lot of support that Sanders has. And especially if, as far as we're talking about kind of how both of those candidates are doing in Illinois, I would have to just estimate and just assume that since Clinton is actually from Illinois, I imagine that she has all the, as Joe said, big shots lined up with her. And I would imagine the formidable Chicago political machine is also probably behind her. She probably is the prohibitive favorite to win Illinois. But if Sanders makes a good effort here and tries to continue to stoke enthusiasm at campuses like this one, perhaps it could be a closer race. Polls are always kind of difficult to gauge until people end up going to vote.
Yeah, well, absolutely right on that. Joe, did you want to?
Yeah, well, what's freaking Democrats out around the country is that in most of these primaries so far, regardless of who's won, is that the Democrats have been underperforming. They're seeing lower turnouts than they saw 8 years ago when Obama was on the ballot, where the Republicans are seeing things shoot up. So even though Clinton and many of her victories has gotten a higher percentage, when you've got, in some cases, almost twice as many people voting on the Republican side, there's a lot of concern that the Republicans are revved up. And regardless of their turmoil, the assumption is that based on just last night's poll where they all knocked Trump, but then they all said they support him. So the concern or the hope of Republicans is that all these people that are showing up for the Republican primaries are going to show out in the fall. And if the Democrats, if they're not revved up about Clinton, and the general view is that they're not, that they may support her, and some, and women are maybe stronger, but if these young people are like, well, Bernie's not on the ballot, I like her better than Trump, but they just don't bother to, you know, miss a class or two to go vote. Okay. So the Democrats have their work cut out for them.
Yeah. What a year this is. Jason, we're going to let you go. I know you're anxious to get back to the office here and do some writing, and we'll let you go and are appreciative of the time you spent with us. Have a safe trip back.
Thank you, Don.
Right. Marshall, let me get you into this conversation. This is certainly a very mixed bag this year politically. What do you hear in the halls of the General Assembly down there, the legislature, about this big race, the race at the top of the ticket? Are legislators as confused as a lot of people are at this point?
Well, I think as far as in the hallways, they're not really focused on the presidential race at this point. They're more focused on what's going on with their bills, what's going on perhaps in some areas with the governor's race. As far as the people that I've been running to, they're not so much focused on the national presidential race as they are as what's going on right here in the halls of the Capitol.
But there have been some endorsements, as Joe had indicated earlier. They're certainly giving it some thought.
They are, and I'm thinking once some major issues are out of the way as far as what's going on here in Jefferson City, we might see more. I'm thinking most of the Republican lawmakers and maybe the Democrats too are going to probably wait until the session's over before they really put themselves out there as far as who they want to be the next president or who they want to be the next governor.
And that'll be a little late.
but they'll have a clearer picture at least on the Republican side by then,
and yeah.
Certainly the Democratic side as well. Anything to add to that, Joe, before we move on?
Well, I think there's a lot of people. Ron Richard made some crack to me about a month ago that one of the problems in the state Senate is that half of his members are running for something. So I think you've got that. So they're paying somewhat attention. There is concern because I was at Lincoln Day's Republican gathering last weekend, as was Jason. Missouri Republicans are concerned about what fallout might be if Donald Trump is the nominee. whether it helps or hurts.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break and come back. We have more to talk about, and we'll do that. My guest in studio is Joe Manis, who is the political reporter extraordinaire here for St. Louis Public Radio, and joining us from the State House in Jefferson City is Marshall Griffin. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue going behind the headlines with Joe Manis and Marshall Griffin in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The director of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency is meeting with elected officials in Illinois today to discuss a pitch to have the complex moved to St. Clair County. A site in North St. Louis is also in the running, though Mayor Francis Lay and other federal and local officials plan to make a, quote, major announcement on Monday. Missouri Democrat Days, held in Hannibal, remains the traditional start of that party's statewide campaigns. All the major candidates for statewide office from that party will meet in Mark Twain's home this weekend. And the St. Louis Zoo Association has withdrawn its offer to purchase Grant's Farm. That means that the farm will stay in the Bush Family Trust. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to Joe Manis and Marshall Griffin. Just mentioned Democratic Days. Joe, you're going to be there, I know.
Yeah, Democrat Days.
Well, are you looking for anything in particular?
Yeah, actually, I'll be interested in how many people show up. This used to be the marquee event for Democrats. I mean, it was in rural Missouri, but it had been up there for decades. And Bill Clinton was there in 92. I'll never forget that one. And Tipper Gore was there a couple years later. It's not a fancy hotel or by a long shot, but it really has this kind of working class feel, a lot of smoke in the lobby. And so I'll be interested. The last few years, the attendance has been down, but I think that the state party, which does not operate Democrat Days, but sometimes it'll help with a speaker, I think they're kind of trying to goose things up this year. Because there is a question about how long the event can keep going. See, it used to be you had a lot of rural Democratic office holders up there. And now, aside from local, there is not one state legislator who's a Democrat in Northeast Missouri. That's how things have changed in just 15 years.
Marshall, any Democrats left in Jefferson City today?
Well, physically speaking, I'm sure they've all gone home to their districts.
Sure.
I think the only Democrat that I can name off the top of my head that's here is Circuit Judge Patricia Joyce. But as far as lawmakers, all the lawmakers here and surrounding Jefferson City are, for the most part, they're all Republican. There might be some county commissioners or city councilmen scattered about that are Democrats here and there. But the only big-name Democrat that's in office here is Judge Joyce.
Okay. Well, it is Friday, after all.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, let's talk about another issue that's starting to get a lot of attention because there's going to be a city election here in just a few weeks. And the earnings tax is a big issue, and it's going to be on the ballot. Very important to the city of St. Louis. Marshall, I'll start with you. I'm going to do this kind of backwards to keep you in the conversation. What's going on in the state legislature with regard to the St. Louis City earnings tax?
Well, it's slowly moving forward. There was a series of committee meetings on Wednesday. I was not able to attend, but I understand that it was. Of course, that was not the first one. There was a Senate committee hearing that I was present for earlier, and that was before the change that was made in the Senate bill, which lets Kansas City off the hook, but keeps St. Louis on the hook, so to speak.
Why? Well, I don't quite get that.
Yeah, that was. Senator Schaefer basically saying that that Kansas City was not playing ball, but St. Louis was. So let's reward Kansas City for not playing ball. It's going to be interesting to see just how far this goes. My guess is that there's probably enough will in the Senate among the Democrats to launch a filibuster and to not bend on it. That's right now. That would be the saving grace as far as any legislation goes. Is that while it may roll through the House unencumbered, it will probably hit a wall in the Senate. I cannot imagine any of the Democrats, especially the St. Louis-based Democrats, giving an inch on this in the Senate. In fact, all of the Democratic senators are from urban areas, either the St. Louis area or Kansas City area. And so I don't I don't foresee any type of deal that would cause them to bend on it.
Well, Rex Sinkfield is starting to throw his money around once again with regard to the earnings tax.
And that's perhaps because he knows it's a lost cause as far as in the halls of Jefferson City. So as far as, you know.
Well, it's going to cost him at least $600,000.
Oh, it's more than that.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure he's got.
Right.
Well, because he put in another more than $400,000 this morning.
Oh,
so,
he did.
So now it's...
It's close to $1 million then.
Yeah, well, it's more than $1 million. If you add up what he gave earlier this week, it's just a little over $1 million. It's like 1.07. I did the math earlier. And just to give a little history, in 2010, Sinkfield had bankrolled the statewide initiative, which passed, which restricts the earnings tax to Kansas City and St. Louis. Now, there had been perceived to be a gentleman's agreement at the time because Mayor Slay and other urban activists actually kind of stayed out of the statewide thing and didn't campaign heavily against it. In return, Sinkfield didn't bankroll any anti-earnings tax efforts in 2011 when they were on the local ballots. Okay, so they passed. So, but the provision that passed statewide requires local votes every 5 years. So that's why we've got this vote now. Well, I think the mayor's office isn't saying. The mayor is pointing out that about 40% of the state of the city's money comes from the earnings tax. But all of a sudden, within the last week, this group has been formed, and Sinkfield has put in more than $1 million in it. And $1 million can pay for a heck of a lot of TV and radio time.
What is his problem with the earnings tax?
Well, he philosophically just opposes income taxes. He thinks that it restricts initiative, that he thinks that a better way to fund efforts is – he told me once, this is about 8 years ago, but he said that he preferred a land tax, which is a little different than a property tax, but he was preferring that. Now, you've got others who say, no, that's not going to do it because that just affects people who own property and they may not have money, they may be elderly or whatever. The earnings tax in its current form has been in play for at least for about 60 years. And so you've got many of the city officials here who are really stunned that all of a sudden you've got Sinkfield making a very active effort. So they're going to have to find money probably shortly because they got 90% approval in 2011. But hey, if you got $1 million going on TV and radio time, you're going to have to put up something to counter that.
The opposition to the earnings tax in Jefferson City, Marshall, what is their argument?
The main argument, at least as it comes from Schaefer, is that the earnings tax, a similar earnings tax in Maryland, was found unconstitutional. And his argument is that Missouri or St. Louis and Kansas City's earning taxes are facing the same inevitable judgment. He said at some point in time, the earning tax system in St. Louis and Kansas City will wind up in court through some type of lawsuit, and then the state of Missouri will wind up having to pay any damages that come from it. So his argument is that this will eventually cost Missouri millions of dollars in some potential future lawsuit, and so for that reason, it has to be dumped.
Yeah. Well, St. Louis's earnings tax has been around longer than Schaefer's been alive, so the assumption is that it's been vetted, even if there's been no high-profile lawsuits lately. Now, Schaefer, just so our listeners know, is running for Missouri Attorney General,
yeah,
and so this is a. And he also has taken money from Sinkfield. Sinkfield opposes the state income tax. He's been pushing for a higher sales tax for several years. He and his allies were among the effort that kind of got a lot of the tax cuts in Kansas. And there's, some say that's wrecked the Kansas economy. Others say it's too early.
We have to wrap this up in a moment. But Joe, and then I'll ask the same to Marshall. Is the city's concern about all of this overstated, do you think?
No. I think they realize that while if the anti-earnings tax people win, there is a 10-year phase-out, so it would give them time to come up with some alternative. I think the mayor's contends that they have been spent several years trying to come up with some sort of alternative and that they haven't come up with anything that they think is fairer because the earnings tax is on anyone who lives or works in the city of St. Louis. Now, I'm not saying it's a good or bad tax. I'm just saying this is what they've been looking at for several years now. I think right now they're not seeing where they can come up with anything that they see that is fairer.
And very quickly, Marshall, does this bill have traction in Jefferson City?
Well, it will have traction. It will have some traction. I think it will remain to be seen how much after the budget gets through the House. That's going to be the main focus on for House members next week. But at this point, I would say any traction it does have will run into a roadblock in the Senate. The Democratic senators from the St. Louis and Kansas City area are determined to stop it.
All right. Marshall, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Have a good weekend down there in Jefferson City. Good to talk to you again. Joe Manis, thank you for being with us. As always, a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
When we come back, classical guitarist Sharon Isbun. She's called the face of classical guitar. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.